don't just question your commitment to the mission, Lana. I question your commitment to America. I mean, you can't put a price tag on freedom. Always never forget that.
From the PAC Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here's your host, the submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons con, you have permission to fire.
I have permission to fire, con, weapons on.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May. What it means to us as Americans. North Americans. Norte Americanos. And humanity. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. So I got asked to do this. Wasn't on my schedule. Not doing it live. But by special request. We're going to talk about Cinco de Mayo, the 5th. Of May. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. Of course, we're on the web. Just look for the Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and the web itself at thedavebowmanshow.com or podcast99.org. Eloqui cognitio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. So it was some years ago. It was right in the middle of an argument that we were having in California, Morgan Hill High School. And some of the kids had worn on the 5th of May, the white kids, the Anglos, were wearing American flag t-shirts. And they were told to turn them inside out because it was Cinco de Mayo and this was a Mexican thing, holiday, and it was offensive to the Mexican students. And this created all kinds of brouhaha in Northern and Central California. People were angry. People were upset. People were, well, there was a lot of chit-chat on radio shows about it. And it got to me because I've always looked at the 5th of May as a pretty important day. The 5th of May was the day that the United States launched the first man into space, Alan B. Shepard. Now, a lot of people go, Dave, it's wrong. It's Yuri Gagarin. The Soviets did it first. But like many things that the Soviets did, they cheated. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me here. I'm not taking anything away from Yuri Gagarin. He was a very brave man to do what he did. And given the difficulties of the Soviet space program, I think more than we give him credit for sometimes. But the fact of the matter is that under the rules as they existed at the time, Yuri Gagarin's flight would not have counted had it been publicly known that he did not land in his craft. This was required. Under the flight rules of that era, in order to set a record, you had to fly in your craft, you had to take off in your craft, and you had to land in your craft, and Yuri Gagarin did not do that. So while he was the first man in space, I'm doing the air quote thing here, he was not the first man to successfully fly into space and then return in his craft. That went to Alan B. Shepard on May 5th. So I'd also often talk about American technology, the birth of the space race, and how wonderful May the 5th really was from an American standpoint. There was, if you happen to be a Confederate, you know, May the 5th, the Battle of Chancellorsville, 1863. One of the finest examples of general leadership, generals in leadership that day. It was also the day that Mary Keast became the first woman awarded a U.S. patent for a new technique to weave straw and silk and thread. The day is one of those, what I refer to as Nexus days. There was a lot of things happening. The Battle of the Wilderness began that day. The Confederate government was dissolved on May the 5th. Memorial Day, first celebrated in Waterloo, New York on the 5th of May. The there was much happening. Cy Young throws the first perfect game in baseball history on the 5th of May. A lot of reasons to look at the 5th of May as a very special day, but the only one that really gets noticed anymore is Cinco de Mayo, the celebration of Mexico's victory over the French at Puebla, the Battle of Puebla in Mexico. And of course, somehow or another, this event, which is almost a non-event in Mexico, has become a huge event in the United States, primarily because beer companies use it to sell beer, cerveza, as it were, and particularly those beer companies that have, you know, a Hispanic and Latin bend to them. They really push it. Most interesting man in the world, Dos Equis, Corona, a few others along the way, Modelo, you know, and they're not bad beer. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying that that's what they figured out. Well, here's this holiday, this celebration, which, by the way, the celebration part started in California, in the United States. So let's push that and sell some more beer. And that's how it really then turned into, from that, this cultural celebration that it never really was, but I'm okay with. I don't have a problem with it being there. I really don't. The upshot of all this is you have to understand what happened before you can really, really grasp why you should care and why you shouldn't be all that upset about it. Now, the thing in Morgan Hill, the thing with the t-shirts, this was an opportunity I felt when it happened. And I got really upset on the air one day, and that's why I got asked to re-record this, because normally on this day, I would just replay that segment. Because frankly, I think it's one of my better segments from when I was on the air, but it's a talk radio segment, so I'm very angry, very aggressive, I'm yelling at a caller. I'm making my points, which, again, has its place, but this isn't that place. That isn't what we do here on Plausibly Live. Yeah, I can get passionate, and I'm all for that. But sometimes I think you lose facts in passion. And if you're not careful, you can cross over the line into anger, and anger leads to the dark side. And then who knows where you wind up at. Point being that Morgan Hill really mismanaged this whole process. Instead of bringing people together and teaching them why Latin students and Anglo students should both be celebrating this day, they treated it instead as a day of division. They treated it as a day where Anglos better turn their shirts inside out, because you don't want to offend the Mexican students who were threatening to beat up the American the white students. And rather, the school chose to just diffuse that by reacting rather than using it as a teaching point. I wondered that day, I wondered then, is it possible that they just don't know? How many Americans do know why Cinco de Mayo really is one of the most American holidays there is? In the broad scheme of things, there are victories that are, well, there's the Pyrrhic victory, you know, the victory that you win, but it costs you so much you lose the war. It's not worth winning, not worth the win. And there are victories that are noteworthy, you know, major accomplishments, the Battle of Gettysburg, the Battle of Midway, the Battle of the Bulge. And then there are victories that are seemingly meaningless. I think the best example I can find of this that modern people would grasp to, the closest example I can get is the Doolittle raid on Japan. What? That wasn't meaningless, Dave. From a military standpoint, it was completely meaningless. In fact, it was an unnecessary risk. For the military accomplishments of it, to risk two aircraft carriers of which one of them went, you know, couldn't even fight at that point because it was Dex was covered with B-25. To risk those two carriers that close to Japan that at that point in the war, when we were outnumbered in aircraft carriers, basically 8-4, was militarily a very poor risk. It didn't seem to make much sense, except in the idea that if we pulled this off, it would show something. And what would that be? Well, it would be a morale booster, for one thing. My grandmother, a blessed memory, she passed away in 1982. To the last time I saw her, had newspapers from that day when the Doolittle raid was announced. She was, you know, she was in her 40s then. My grandmother lived through both World Wars and the Korean War and the Vietnam War as a, you know, as a civilian. She wasn't in the military, but she was of age to understand what was going on in all of that. And to the day that she left us, she would tell me when talking about that day, that was the day that she knew we were going to win the Second World War. Up until that point, it just wasn't, you know, I mean, it's a possibility we could lose this, but that was the day she knew. And she still has the newspaper, had the newspapers with the announcement of that raid. And again, militarily, it accomplished nothing, but psychologically, it really changed the American psyche. In some ways, it changed the Japanese psyche. And more importantly, it caused downstream military moves to be made that otherwise might not have been made, which ended in victory for the United States. In the same way, this battle in Puebla, Mexico, is a minor, almost militarily meaningless skirmish. It's so small that most historians in the broad scheme of the war between Mexico and France don't really, militarily, they don't pay much attention to it. But it had its moment, it had its meaning in a psychological effect that it had on the Mexican people at the time. So what is this battle all about? Why are we fighting between France and Mexico in 1862? Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. What's going on in 1862? What's happening in the North American continent in May of 1862? Well, by this point, the Civil War is well underway in the United States. And the United States is completely occupied by the Civil War. North versus the South. In fact, at this point, McClellan has begun his famous Peninsular Campaign, which he believes will drive the Confederacy to surrender. Because at this point in the war, it's still a giant game of capture the flag. The idea is if you capture the enemy's capital, capture their flag, they will surrender. This is not true, but at this point, nobody knows that. McClellan is trying to drive towards Richmond. He will be defeated in Richmond, at the gates of Richmond. Robert E. Lee will defeat him and go on to his fame. McClellan will go on to his failures. He'll be relieved as the commander of the Army of the Potomac, and eventually he will run for president against Abraham Lincoln in 1864, and he will lose. In the meantime, other nations have been watching what's going on. England has ties to the South, both emotionally and functionally, economically. England is a very textile-driven economy. It needs Southern cotton to make that economy work. But the problem they have is that while there were more loyalists in the South during the American Revolution 100 years before than there were in the North, so there's some emotional ties, the biggest problem is slavery. England has done away with slavery and, in a moral fit, has really condemned it, and to the point where it's actively hunting slavers out on the oceans. And of course, the South is all about slavery. That's why there is a Confederacy. Don't tell me it's something else, because it's not. It's about slavery. They said it themselves. We're rebelling because you want to take our slaves, and we're not going to let you do that. And so they went to war over slavery. And England, while it economically favors the South, and perhaps emotionally favors the South, has this moral problem in that the South supports slavery, and we can't do that. And so while it sort of supports the South, it doesn't support the North. That's its solution. It just sort of actively sits on the sideline. France, in the meantime, has gone through a great deal of brouhaha in the early part of the century, the 19th century. Of course, Napoleon, those wars that we were actually a part of in 1812 to 1814, it has left itself scarred. France is trying to emotionally pull itself back together again. We're strong, but we're not. We're strong, but we're not. And so, down in old Mexico, there's a small, really meaningless insult hurled at France via some bakery stuff, and it's so ridiculous. But France uses this as a reason in 1862 to invade Mexico. But their thought process is much broader. France is hoping, at some point, France still feels like selling Louisiana to the United States was a mistake. And maybe, just maybe, depending on how that Civil War goes, France might be in a position to retake at least part of Louisiana back, specifically New Orleans, specifically areas that are French-leaning already. But they got to get there first, and they're not going to get there by allying themselves with the South. They can't really do that because, once again, this slavery thing kind of pokes its head up. And the North has always been leery of France, as we know. But here's this opportunity. Mexico insults them, and off they go into Mexico. Mexico has no way to stop the French. Their army is small. It is ill-trained. Here come these fancy French troops in their uniforms and ships and leaders and cannons and everything else, and they land and they begin to march across Mexico almost unstoppably until they reach the little town called Puebla. And at the Battle of Puebla, on the 5th of May, 1862, the French were not stopped, at least not entirely, but for the first time, the Mexican troops stood up and at least showed that they could be, if not stopped, they could be slowed down. And so, this was one of those cases where, all of a sudden, there was reason to think, look, we're not helpless in the face of the French. We're not completely useless. We're not completely without hope. If we can stop them once, we can do it again. And it rallies the Mexican people to continue the fight rather than giving up. And even though France pushes into Mexico City, and even though France installs Napoleon III or Maximilian III as the Emperor of France, I'm sorry, Emperor of Mexico, and even though it seems like the French have won, this Battle of Puebla continues to inspire enough of the Mexican people that there's continual resistance. This idea, we're not giving up. They didn't give up at Puebla. We're not giving up here. And when the battle is announced, when the victory at Puebla is announced, the minor, meaningless though it is, when word reaches California, which again, 50 years before had been part of Mexico. Mexico had controlled California until the Mexican-American War, which ended up with California, Arizona, and New Mexico essentially being sold. The United States went down there, won the war, and then bought California, Arizona, New Mexico from Mexico. They sold it to the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. They sold it. They have no claims for it whatsoever. None. By treaty, they sold it to the United States. But it still has strong ties to Mexico. As any culture would. And when the former Mexican citizens and descendants of Mexican citizens heard about the victory at Puebla, they began firing their guns into the air and celebrating this stand against the French. These are Americans now, but they're still celebrating Mexico's victory. How wonderful is that? It is that victory that it doesn't stop the French, but it doesn't allow them to complete their takeover of Mexico. The United States Congress lets France know. They send a message via envoys to the French government. Hey, we don't like what you're doing down there. We're a little busy right now, but when we get done with this, stand by. Because we don't like what you're doing. You know, the old Monroe Doctrine, still in effect. And once we get done with our little issues here, we're going to take action. French are not impressed by this. Of course, they continue on. They install Maximilian. They become the Emperor of Mexico, and things go on their way. When the Civil War ends, the United States actually begins to move troops towards Mexico with the intent of dislodging the French. But by this point, by this time, the French have outstayed their welcome in Mexico. Conquest is easy. Control is not, Captain Kirk once said. And they're beginning to struggle. It's beginning to cost them more money to maintain their presence in Mexico than they're really prepared to spend. More than they actually have. Their Mexican control begins to melt away at the fringes, the resistance in Mexico, the Mexican army, which has maintained its, you know, its stability, it's held together, begins to push back. And eventually, the nation of Mexico chases the French out. And they line up Maximilian against the wall and they shoot him for being, you know, a problem. And all that comes about because the Battle of Puebla on the 5th of May, Cinco de Mayo, inspires the Mexican people to not give up and allows the United States to not have to worry about French invasion of Louisiana and allows the United States not to have to worry about French involvement in the American Civil War from the Southern Front and not allowing them to help the South. And allows the United States really to focus on the Confederacy and win the Civil War. It's a minor thing. It's not really all that important in the big scheme of military strategy. But in terms of emotional support, in terms of emotionalism, it is a huge victory. It inspires. It uplifts. It deserves celebration. And it continues to have it. I think that what, unfortunately, it has become today, this divisive element here, has lost because it's been able to become that because no one understands what's actually going on. Nobody understands the real meaning of what's happening here. Everything here becomes about, I'm Mexican and I'm celebrating my culture and you're an American and you shouldn't tell me to take off my American t-shirt. And it becomes such an argument that it's no longer about how this benefited both countries. And perhaps it's time we took a pause and stepped back and considered that. I don't have any problem with Cinco de Mayo at all. I really don't. I'll have a cerveza and I will salute the troops who stood in the French way that day. Because I know the truth is that in some ways they may have saved America that day. In some ways, they changed the course of our war by not allowing the French to get involved. And out on those battlefields of our war, there were two men in particular. One Francis Marion Holt, private, 1st Arkansas Cavalry, U.S., who would win his war even though he was wounded and captured. And on another front was another guy, Private John George Bowman, 40th Indiana. And because they won their war, the country was saved. And they would go on to have children. John George would have his son, Lonzo. Lonzo would have his son, Wilbur. Wilbur would have his son, Herb. Herb would have his son, Don. And Don would have his son, David. Francis Marion would have his son, Charles Leonidas. Good Southern name, right? Charlie Leonidas would have his daughter, Rachel. Rachel would have her son with Don, David. Do you understand why this holiday should be celebrated as an American holiday? We're all Norte Americans, whether you like it or not. We're all part of the same continent. We all have the same basic interests. We all have the same desires and wants. And rather than using it as a divisive moment, rather than using it to divide our two cultures, rather to divide our two peoples, our countries, our cultures, our histories, we should use it to remind ourselves of how badass we North Americans are. That even the French, even the French couldn't conquer Mexico. The hell makes you think anybody else is going to do it, except for the United States? And we did once, and even then, we stepped back and went, okay, we won, but here's $12 million. And we're not just going to take this from you. We're going to buy it from you. And hopefully we'll all get along in the future. And I wish we could look at it that way. I wish we could look at it in that approach and begin to get along a whole lot better by celebrating the 5th of May, the day an American went into space, the first man to successfully fly into space, and the day we told the French to, well, bugger off. That's why we should be celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Have a great day, everybody. We will see you on Monday for a brand new live episode of Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.